Jim, I was just sitting here thinking about my journey as a hospitality professional and how I would not be here if it wasn't for several folks who saw my greatness before I did, before I even knew that like that was possible, that someone actually believed in me so much that they would, in a couple of cases, stake their jobs on it, which is scary because very often what happened to me is they would come back and say, well, you're not going to believe what I did for you. Like, what do you mean did for me? And so today on this episode of Turning the Table, we wanted to talk about hospitality entrepreneurs in general, and also the idea that it's kind of like a hero's journey. And for those who don't know, Joseph Campbell was an author, and he also researched almost every single tale that's been told all the way back in history. And one of the themes that kept recurring was this idea of a hero's journey, in that, you know, there's a hero, he's not aware of his powers. He meets a mentor. The mentor shows him how to actually use that power to wield it responsibly. And then in every hero's journey, the mentor must die in order for the hero to actually step into his greatness. And I recognize in my own path that maybe you've had the same experience, Jim. Maybe folks listening to this can also name the person that made it the pivotal difference in their life. I had two. One gentleman's name was Ed Jamison and Mark Sioko. So I just wanted to name those so that folks who are listening to this might want to reconnect to that person that believed in them so much that they were willing to put their ass on the line to coach and mentor them. If you're listening to this as the podcast, and this is the first time you're hearing this, just shout out their name. Call them into the circle. We want to honor them. We want to celebrate them. And we thought it would be a great opportunity to bring in one of our favorite operators from Calgary, Jeff Jamison, who's the principal of Hangry Panda Hospitality, which I both of us chuckle about that. And we'll get into, you know, I will goad you into naming your mentors as well as Jeff will do that. Because ultimately, if we're aware that someone actually mentored us and stood for us, then how do we pay that forward? I guess is the theme of today. So it's about reflection. It's about honoring those that got us here. It's about how we show up to others. And if you're in that stage where you're grateful for the help that you've been given and you're curious on a way in which to pay that forward, Jeff is one of the greatest examples. So we're really happy to have him here. And do you want to name your mentor, Jim?
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's lots, right? And you can look at that in lots of different ways. But from a business perspective, the one that always comes to the forefront is a man named Jim Stewart. It's funny. We connect on the phone still and do lots of things together. And it's always, hi, Jim. Hi, Jim. You know, it's like funny. We still do it. It's kind of awkward. This both named Jim. We should come up with a nickname or something. So it's not quite so strict. But yeah, he's been a mentor of mine since I was probably, I don't know, 19 years old or something like that. It's really good times.
Fantastic. Yeah. So let's celebrate him. Let's celebrate Jeff, the journey that he's been on. I think that listeners will get a lot out of his story. In particular, that pivot point where he came to a decision that he understood that he could do things better and then put his ass on the line and put others' asses on the line in pursuit of that dream, because all of us are coming to this conclusion out of COVID that maybe there's something more for us. Maybe there's something else that we can do. Maybe there's a way that we can be in service to others, whether that's running a restaurant and providing an excuse for folks to come around a table and be in relationship with one another, or building a staff and mentoring them so strongly that you become a permanent fixture in their mind. So thank you. Thank you, Kristen. That's brilliant. Kristen just wanted to chime in and say, hi, gents. My mentor is Michael Sesnick. So Michael Sesnick, we salute you. And I know Kristen's working really hard at paying that forward. So thank you very much for naming him. And we'll get into a lot of that and more right after these messages.
Welcome to Turning the Table, the most progressive weekly podcast for today's food and beverage industry, featuring staff-centric operating solutions for restaurants in the hashtag new hospitality culture. Join Jim Taylor of Benchmark 60 and Adam Lamb as they turn the tables on the prevailing operating assumptions of running a restaurant in favor of innovative solutions to our industry's most persistent challenges. Thanks for joining us. And now, on to the show. This episode is made possible by eVocalize. eVocalize makes complex local digital marketing push-button easy for anyone. Empower your franchises with programs that automatically optimize performance and program spending across Google, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, all from one easy-to-use collaborative marketing platform. To find out more, go to turningthetablepodcast.com/eVocalize.
And we want to welcome Jeff Jameson to the show, founder.
Thank you, Jeff. Good founder, to see you.
Founder, brand builder, restaurateur, retailer of fine wine, beer, and spirits, founding board member of the Alberta Hospitality Association, and just all around great person. A great person not only to have on the show, but certainly to work for. So welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. That's a lot of sunshine right there.
It is, right?
I really appreciate that. Wow.
Well, right now in Asheville, you know, we've had a series of thunderstorms come through in the last several days. So it's currently raining. So a little bit of sunshine right now is well worth it, man.
Well, thank you. And in my experience with you, Jeff, I think you're going to bring a lot of sunshine and probably some action and some excitement and some, you know, unpredictability and whatever else to the conversation. So looking forward to that. So.
Now, Jim, weren't you telling me right before we got on the show that you and Jeff have been kind of like in, like, circling one another for quite a while, known one another, spent a little bit of time one another, but certainly this is a great opportunity to do a deep dive.
Yeah.
So he's not an unknown property to you or the show.
He's not. I mean, Jeff and I don't even know. We probably met in 2016 or something like that. I was living and working in Calgary in the market that Jeff operates in and, you know, had a couple of social interactions here and there and, you know, went to an event or two together and that kind of thing. But we were actually competitors at one point. We were, you know, in the restaurant business, working against each other, I guess, in one way or another. But, you know, I always have kept an eye on Jeff, and it's good to have you on the show here.
I always, and I made sure, too, to touch base with Jim. I mean, obviously, we were fast friends, even though we perhaps were in competition, but we have similar, I guess, views on life, which is how I ended up here.
Right.
It's true.
So, Jeff, can you kind of give us kind of the thumbnail sketch of your journey?
Yeah.
Into hospitality, into entrepreneurship, your hero's journey, the mentors that perhaps shifted the entire trajectory of your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, man.
So I first stepped into a restaurant at about 16 years old in Regina, Saskatchewan, what essentially amounts to a small town. It's a large town, I guess you could say. And, you know, instantly fell in love with it. I had friends that worked in this restaurant and we, you know, they loved what they did every day, even at that age. So I was just hungry to get in there. And I basically begged for that first job, which was setting tables and washing dishes. And instantly, I just loved the structure. It was a really run place. And we're going to get into that, I'm sure, down the road. And so I just fell in love with the industry. Worked my way up through there, and I did take a brief hiatus from the restaurant industry in the, I guess, mid-2000s after coming to Calgary to open a restaurant with the group. It was the Earl's group, so we opened up the Salt Lake Steakhouse here. I ended up running it for a few years, and then I took a hiatus. I was a little burnt out, and I went into an office environment here in oil and gas. It's kind of the thing to do in Calgary is end up in an oil and gas office. But I found my way back. I ended up opening up a retail wine store with a business partner while still working in oil and gas in 2012. So that was Vine Arts Wine and Spirits. And that was my first foray into entrepreneurship. And then in 2015, we opened Proof Cocktail Bar, which was back into the hospitality industry. And that went, those both obviously went very well. For us, we opened our second location of Vine Arts Wine and Spirits, the retail store on 17th Avenue in 2016. We opened our first, I guess, full-service restaurant, a style hospitality business in late 2017. in Donnamac Restaurant. And we're just opening, hopefully in 3 to 4 weeks, you know, if everything goes well, which it has been so far. We're going to open our third location of Vine Arts Wine and Spirits in Edmonton.
Congratulations.
Oh,
thank you.
Very cool to see that you're on the grow again.
Yeah, I mean, obviously COVID put the brakes on everything. I think there's a lot of smart operators that had a lot of backing financially that like saw it as an opportunity. I saw it as an opportunity too, but I didn't have the cash to make those moves during that time. And here in Calgary, some operators like really leaned into the fact that they're like, well, coming out of this, we're going to have to be, you know, pumping. And the Concord Group here opened a couple of really good concepts through close to COVID. And I think they're seeing success because of it, because you hit that wave of like people just like, I want to get out and I want to try something new. Like I'm free. And yeah, there was a lot of pretty positive movement towards those new spots. So if you had the dough, but yeah, we're happy to be, we settled ourselves after COVID and we're happy to be growing again for sure.
Question for you about, I mean, for those that haven't been to either Calgary or any of Jeff's spots, I mean, Donnamac is a fantastic restaurant. And Proof is one of the best cocktail bars around. I mean, it's a home run.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever asked you this before. What was it that got you into the retail side of things first? How come you went there first?
It was my business partner. So I split all of the businesses 50-50 with my business partner, Jesse Willis. So when I went into oil and gas, I was looking for kind of an outlet to stay adjacent to hospitality because I really love the people and I love the atmosphere. And I also needed to really reduce my costs on my drinking. I got a part-time job at a local wine store, Bin 905. And there was a bunch of incredibly intelligent wine people at that particular location. At the time, it was the boutique wine store in the city. I think if you were a wine geek, there's two, Metro Vino and that one. And so I got to meet some incredible people. And my business partner, Jesse, at the time was in his mid-20s. And he said, hey, like I would really like to open a wine store at some point. And we basically decided to kind of chase that down. I had run businesses in the past and I was like, yeah, this can't be too hard. I mean, I've run restaurants and that basically means I could run anything. So we started to look into that. I would say about 2009, we started to kind of scratch the surface. It wasn't until 2012 that we finally got the doors open, but that was kind of what got it started. And then the entrance back into hospitality was kind of a funny thing. It was always in the back of my mind that I was sitting on some skills that were, I wouldn't say being wasted, but perhaps being underutilized. Obviously, lots of those skills were being utilized in the corporate world that I was attempting to climb. But I knew that we had the ability, if something came up in the future, to kind of utilize those skills. And in 2014, I guess, our landlord, where Vine Arts was like, hey, listen, the corner unit's coming up. There's nobody else in the building. So do you want the entire base retail units and expand Vine Arts? And we're like, no, that would be dumb because we're very happy with the rent we're paying in this small space. But we had been traveling quite a bit into the States. We had made our first trips to Kentucky and Nashville, and we'd gone to New York, and we'd spent a lot of time in Portland at the time, which was amazing at the time. Well, it's had its problems recently, but it was really the head of the underground American food scene at the time. And so we were seeing some really cool things that we didn't see in Calgary. And so we're like, you know, I think there's an opportunity here for a proper cocktail bar. Calgary did have some offerings at the time. Milk Tiger, legendary kind of cocktail dive bar concept, which sadly just recently closed, was a great job at the time, but we wanted to elevate it a little bit. And we opened Proof in 2015 and it was gangbusters right out of the gate. We had some really good operators, Tony Migliorese, who's gone on to open DOP here in town, which is rave reviews, as well as Pizza Face Concept. So he was our original operator. And Jesse and I had all the, Jesse, the experience on the spirit side of things. We obviously had access to really good product because of our retail store. So we opened with an extraordinarily impressive team, a lot of spirits with a big, impressive back bar, a lot of hard to find stuff. And it went big for sure.
And it's intimate, right? I mean, how many seats is it? Less than 50, right?
Yeah, like it's around 55 seats. So it's a tiny little bar. We've gotten lots of accolades. I don't pump my tires very often, but we've gotten a lot of accolades. We've been one of the top cocktail bars in the country for a lot of years.
Yeah. And Adam, if you're ever in Calgary at Christmas, the Christmas pop-up that they do is just, I mean, for lack of a better term, just magical.
Love it. And so, Jeff, on your trajectory, on your journey, your hero's journey into food and beverage entrepreneurship, who was it that stood for you and let you know that maybe you weren't crazy? Maybe the ideas that you had merit and should, like, who was your biggest cheerleader at that time?
Well, there's a number. And by the way, I just want to segue that I love this subject matter. And I love bringing up Joseph Campbell. I'm a big fan of Joseph Campbell. And Joseph Campbell developed a lot of his theories probably from, what was his name? The guy that studied under, it's not coming to me. But the idea that you do, the hero has to die is a great thing, because it's not the hero necessarily that's dying. It's a part of the hero, or the old hero, right? Like the old person, right? Yeah. And so like burning away that former self and finding a new self. Carl Jung, find it.
Yes, exactly.
The pressure's on when the camera's on. You can't come up with any. But, and I really, that really resonates with me. And I think that everybody, well, hopefully everybody does it at least once in their lives, where they just kind of burn away the old self and try and recreate themselves in a meaningful manner. Really, if you're really stepping forward and moving forward in your life, I think you're doing it all the time, multiply. Like you're leaving boundaries behind, you're moving forward. So love the subject matter. We're excited to talk about it. There's a lot, and I want to focus pretty heavily, I guess, on the initial, the first.
Sure.
And he was, his name was John Fraser. So he ran the Earls in Regina at the time. He was the one that hired me when I came in begging for a job. I had to come in twice. I didn't get hired the first time. And I came back and I was like, look, like I'm going to work super hard. And if I don't work super hard, you can just can me. I don't, you know, like, I mean, it's, I don't care. Like, because I know that I'm going to be able to contribute. Right. And he liked that. And he brought me on, and he was a mentor in a very subtle way. It wasn't a very active mentorship from him. It wasn't like let's sit down and talk about philosophy.
Sure.
Yeah.
He just was, his integrity was unquestionable, and you could recognize it right away. And you saw the things that he did for that business, which he did not own, but he acted as if he did. Like no one I've ever seen. And he just brought integrity to the job, and it showed. Obviously, it trickles down through the staff. Jim had commented on a picture I had posted a few months ago on LinkedIn. And it was not the original staff that I got hired into, but the staff from a few years after. And they really, truly were some of the greatest. It was one of the greatest teams that I had ever worked with. And that was because of John. He just, and it wasn't demanding, right? Like he showed you why it was important to act with integrity, put the customer first, to have a sense of teamwork, to all put in and contribute, and that we'll have a really good time and the greater good will move forward, not just for the business, but for all of us if we do that. And it stuck with me like forever. And I look back on it, you know, as one of those things that's truly like it, you cannot possibly put a value to that. I can't imagine how many people in our industry, unfortunately, and in all industries, but I only have, you know, reference points for our industry, but they walk into their first hospitality job and it's just, it's a nightmare. And, I can see why people would shift in and out of this industry or just use it as a piggy bank to support other parts of their lives or things like that. When you don't have leaders quite like John who really ingrained that. And that kind of leadership, you know, it works its way down the line. Another mentor of mine was Jacqueline Boulanger, who worked directly with John for years. And she ended up being my GM, restaurant leader at the, before I came out to Calgary as well. And I mean, she, same thing, just like made it very clear. Everybody understood what their role was. Everybody understood not only what their role was operationally, but what their role was as a team member, as a support system within the restaurant. You had better be, you know, moving yourself forward in some manner, whether it was like you're learning of the menu or your personal or professional goals. And those things have really kind of carried their way into my businesses for sure. And it's because of that first initial impact.
Are there any specific conversations with either of those mentors that you remember that stand out, that, you know, Adam and I have had a couple of these discussions in the past on episodes about some of these, for me, for sure, and some for him. But are there any, you know, messages or conversations or anything that stand out that you're like, I will never forget that?
Yeah. Like, I mean, with John, for sure, he was very clear that, the only way to be successful is to have people that we're going to be doing everything right. Right. And so, and I mean, I think that was a lot of the philosophy of the business at the time as well,
sure.
Leaning hard into that, but John embodied it for sure. And I mean, we had many conversations about like, look, if you want to take this seriously, Billy, he called everybody Billy. I think it was like, it was so that, you know, because he would forget people's names, not staff ever, but so many customers through that place. He'd be like, hey, Billy, grab a seat. You know, like, so, if you really want to do this, you're going to need support. And that support is not necessarily going to come from me. It's going to come from underneath you. And when we first moved into the bar managing position there, that was a lot of his advice. And it was difficult because I was working with, and I think one of the reasons this conversation came up is because I was working with bartenders who had far more experience than I did behind the bar, older than me by, you know, probably quite a bit, 5 years at the least.
Yeah.
And it was about getting those people on your side, right? You know, you may feel like they see you as a twerp, but and a pain in their ass, but you have to find a way to get them on your side, because if they're not on your side, you're going to fail. No matter how good you are, you're going to fail. So he was very big on that, kind of educating everybody so that you had this support system from beneath. And yeah. You know, it's funny. I don't think about a lot of the individual conversations I had. Jackie and I had a lot of conversations. We were very friendly. I'm very close with her family. Her younger brother, Paul, who was the best man at my wedding, my first wedding. And there's a friendship thing there. But, you know, she was exceptional at separating, you know, work and friendship. And not in an uncomfortable way either, right? Like, just, you know, this is our job here. This is the job we have to get done together. I'm glad that we're teammates.
Yeah.
And we'll be friends after, you know? So those were a lot of the, positive impacts those two had for sure.
Very cool. Yeah, that friendship at work thing. I mean, a message that I always got from one of my mentors was, he always used to say, I don't come here to make friends, you know, that statement, right?
Yeah.
But then he would always follow it up with, we might end up being friends, but I'm not coming here to find friends. This is my career and my business. And, you know, he was the owner of the place. So he would always make sure that message was very clear. We might end up being friends and we might, you know, have a beer one day, but I'm not here to make friends. So let's keep this professional kind of thing. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important. And I mean, I get close with a lot of my managers. And I mean, I don't think I have, and I have what would be friendly relationships with a lot of the managers. But you do have to have a separation of work and pleasure always. And I think that it's important. And I think that, honestly, whether it's recognized early on in the relationship, as you move down the road, it's appreciated, because it's very difficult to mentor somebody who you have a friendly relationship with. It's possible to carry those two relationships forward, but you know, it's very difficult. Yeah. I mean, friendships are very much reciprocal, right? Whereas there's a power imbalance in a mentoring relationship that that doesn't necessarily exist in friendships. And it's hard to switch those on and
off. Right. Very true.
There was someone who posted a comment to the LinkedIn event announcement and made the comment that what a great topic and how apropos, because isn't this what happens to, you know, most culinary professionals? And so just to, for those of folks who are not necessarily aware or up to speed or don't give a shit about this idea of masculine archetypes, there's both immature and mature insofar as that work continued through a book called King, Warrior, Magician, Lover. But the idea is that, you know, there's an imprint that we're born with and that there are evolutions of our emotional states as we grow older. And it's funny to note that the hero is actually the final iteration of the immature. And that, as you said, Jeff, not only do our mentors have to die, but also the hero has to die in order for the mature masculine warrior to show up. And that's typically an area that's kind of gray, because most of my time later on in my career was about modeling and mentoring mature professionalism. Like one of our dear friends, Chef Ryan Dodge, said, you know, we do a really crappy job at communicating effectively to potential associates or folks coming into the industry that, you know, there's certain things that you can rip right. You can make a great omelet 100 times, 300 times. That's a skill. And yet there are certain aspects of being a true hospitality professional that won't ever come until you actually become mature. Like it's the we instead of the me. It's like passing on praise and taking on the hits. And so this whole idea of like the hero's journey is fantastic. And it's wise to understand that that's what we're going through, but that's only half the journey. So typically now the wizard shows up, and the wizard is all about mentorship, secret knowledge, rite of initiation, which as a chef, I always thought like, yeah, I've worked for chefs that I'd have to look over their shoulders to see what the hell they were doing in the bowl, right? As they're whisking it, and they wouldn't even, and their shoulder would raise even higher. I'm like, I'm gonna have to work harder, man, if I can figure out what he's doing right here. And so as you have matured, how have you become a mentor to others?
Yeah, well, and that's an interesting way to go. If my wonderful wife is watching this, she's like, I'm still waiting for the hero to die.
because the hero's fun, right? Sure.
I still have a little bit of jester in me for sure. Yes. No, and it is a struggle. It's a struggle. I mean, if I'm being completely honest, it is something that pops in and out, right? Like before we hopped on this call, I was telling you, like, I just went through Stampede here in Calgary, and like, you know, that's a time I like to go and have a bunch of fun. But I think that, you know, that mentor starts to knock on the door towards the end of Stampede and say like, hey man, like what's going on with your businesses while you're out here doing all this?
Right.
And it's funny. I'll share a story. Last Saturday of Stampede, I had gone, you know, out from Tuesday to Friday, and I was in some of the businesses, but mostly socializing and bringing people in. And I sent a note about labor to my two managers at the restaurants, just being like, hey, listen, like, we got to get on top of this. Like, there's a few things that we're certainly not doing. And I want to maybe talk about instituting a few organizational things that's going to help us solve some of these problems that we're going through. And we really got to figure this out. And I came into my restaurant here, and Julie, my fantastic general manager here at Donnemac, was like, "So the email." I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "How much anxiety did you have when you sent that about?" Like, and I was like, "I did have a lot, but that doesn't change the fact that the points are true." We got, and it was all just me, you know, kind of like looking back and saying, like, "Holy, I'm focused away from the businesses. I need to refocus, right?" And so, like, there's this interplay between the mentor and the proper leader. And the kind of slipping out and still being the guy that is relaxed and chill and the whole night. So I know that I'm not completely there yet all the time, but I try and be as much as humanly possible. And I try and mentor the managers that we have. I think one of the big things that I've learned is from mentoring. And I mean, this was a hard one for me to learn because I always wanted to have my fingers in all of the business, like all over all levels, you know, being that guy that was sitting down with even the dishwasher or the new bar back or whatever. And and it's kind of diminishing returns, right? Like, so what I've tried to do over the last few years is like get my handful of leaders, get my managers, and just like really focus on bringing them along. And so the mentoring now is a greater amount to each individual. And so I'm working very closely with the general managers and the managers of the wine stores and just trying to get them to a point where they become the ones that are mentoring those beneath them. And it seems to be working. You know, we have very good retention here across all of our businesses, which is crazy for our industries. Till Katie, who's one of our managers, our longest serving employee, who's just going on mat leave here, has been with us for 10 years, I think. And wow. my two GMs, who I personally hired, both of them, when I was in a period of time when I was running Proof, they've been with me for 6 years. So and I find a lot of that retention comes from, and I mean, Jim, I don't have to, I'm preaching to the guru on this, but a lot of that retention comes from the fact that you have to recognize people want to be challenged. They want to feel like they're moving forward. They want to have goals. They want to achieve goals. Those are the things at the end of the day that give people meaning, chase happiness, try and chase meaning, and kind of mentorship is something that I continually speak about with my managers. Is like, look, like this job will be happy for you, but we're not going to focus on what makes it happy for you. We're going to focus on you going home and feeling like you have meaning in your job, because then you're going to be happy. So
amazing. That's so good. Six years for those two managers and a 10-year employee. I mean, in any hospitality business, that's incredible. Well done.
It's great. And, we suffer the same challenges that all hospitality experiences, right? People come in and they go. But I think that especially people who have kind of done the rounds in our industry, and this is an unfortunate thing. And I got to say, like, Jim, I'd love to hear your opinions on this. I think it is getting a lot better. Like, I've been in this industry for 20 years, and the types of things that are occurring with regards to development and mentorship in our industry, it's getting, I experienced it luckily, in the late 1990s, but I was one of few that was experiencing it at that time. Now, I think it's probably more common than uncommon. And I'm so grateful that that's the case, because the rising tide lifts all boats.
What's your take on, just in terms of this whole mentorship thing? I mean, we hear a lot of people talking about the Gen Z thing, like the Gen Z's, you know, they're lazy. They don't want to be, they don't want to work. They don't want to work in restaurants. They don't want to work restaurant hours. They don't want to, and all this stuff. I've got into some good, interesting, almost even heated discussions because I believe that Gen Z is going to be the best thing that's ever happened to the restaurant industry. But what's your specific take on that from a mentor? Do they still want that? You know, like, hey, someone bring me along and show me some things and teach me and challenge me. And, you know, what's, what do you see that, where do you see that shifting?
I love Gen Z. I think, I mean, we have some fantastic examples around our spots of Gen Z, you know, and I mean, not to generalize because, you know, people, individuals are individuals. And,
sure.
But I think that we took a bit of too far of a pendulum swing and they're the correctors. Like, I think that they see through some of the BS around, you know, this, I guess, push of anti-capitalism, if you want to call it anti-capitalism, that the millennials maybe suffered from a little bit too much. And I think that they see the reality of the situation, which is there can be balance between, there can truly be balance between making money and having a good home life. I think that the millennials got into, and again, generalization, but I think we saw a generational thing with that age group that was very, your employers are your oppressors to a certain degree. And that was kind of prevalent in that sort of, in the society at that time as they were coming up. But I don't see that as much with this younger crowd. Like people in their early 20s, they seem to be engaged. I'm really hoping, it feels like, and I mean, this is anecdotal. I don't have any evidence to point towards it, but it feels like we had a people considering this a career for, it almost felt like a decade. Like it was very difficult to find people that you bring up, but it's starting to shift a little bit and it's becoming, people are more open to it. I think a lot of that probably has to do with how we've structured pay and, you know, gotten benefits to people in management and in some cases across the board. And there's been some things that have brought our industry into a legitimate career path kind of, you know. So it's that, but I think also socially it's, yeah, they're looking for things that aren't necessarily office corporate job type job. Yeah. I don't know. I'm bullish on this generation. Plus, you know, we see obviously people coming from other countries, especially in this country, a lot. Those people largely tend to be, we're here to work. Do you know what I mean? Like we're here because we were leaving a bad situation and we want to show that we can make it here and we want to make it for our kids. We want to make it for our family. And so there's a large group of new immigrants coming to this country that are also just like the work ethic is through the roof and they want meaning and they want structure as well. So yeah, no, I see a lot of positives. How do you see it? Like, are you seeing the same? We're in three different markets here.
Right.
Is it the same thing?
So I actually have a comment and a question if I could, Jeff. So the other thing that I've noticed is that these folks are actually looking for structure. They're actually looking for clear boundaries. They're actually looking for clearly defined sandbox in which they can play, given the fact that, you know, sometimes work is not play and sometimes work is work and, you know, we got to do what we got to do. However, they're looking for a seat at the table. They want to be involved in the discussion. They don't necessarily ask to make the final decision, but they're very impassioned about being able to have a space where they can be heard and valued. And my question for you is, when did you decide it would be good policy to let your employees name your new restaurants?
Yeah, well, that was a business partnership that we had. And I, you know what, at the time too, and I've shifted from this kind of outlook. So we, that would have been 2017. We were looking to get into a partnership with our operators that were operating Donamac. And at that time, I was running proof And we just opened the second Vinehart's. And I had two very good operators, so a chef and a general manager. And it was a very collaborative. I was very collaborative at that time. I was like, well, what are we going to do with this place? What's it going to be? And so these two operators came up with a bunch of stuff. And one of the concepts for naming of it, because we were talking about a place that we wanted to have like kind of elevated casual food, but it feels like home cooking. And we've nailed that now. It was a little bit rocky out of the gates, but the concept was the right concept. And our general manager and operating partner at the time was like, you know, my grandmother, her name, we call her Donna Mack. She's like really one of these matriarchs that kind of feeds the neighborhood, right? Like always has people, or is always cooking, is always bringing people food. I'd like to embody that in the restaurant. And so I was like, that's great. And it's a good story. And absolutely, let's do it. And let's move forward with it. We had a bit of a disconnect, and that was perfect. And I mean, we had a bit of a disconnect between the food and that concept name at the time. We had an extraordinary chef who was our chef at Proof prior, but there was just a bit of a disconnect that we didn't address. I could have probably been a better leader at the time. The food was great, but it didn't speak to the concept. Coming out of COVID, we kind of reined that in. And I, at the time, because the concept was just like creeping along, not doing anything positively, not doing anything too negatively, but COVID hit and I was like, oh Lord, like what are we going to do here? So we had a decision point coming out of it, whether we were going to like rebrand. We didn't have a ton of cash, but we thought we could rebrand. But I believed in it still at that point. And I was like, you know what? No, it still fits. I had some good advice from my general manager at the time who was like, I think we should lean into it. And we had hired an incredible chef at that time, Leticia Kropchinski. LT went on to become the head chef at the Canadian consulate, the embassy in Washington. Yeah, she's extraordinarily talented. LT, if you're watching, I hope you're feeling better. LT just had a bike accident. He's recovering from, but she's comprised of genius, I don't mind saying. And she is a young but bright star in the chef game. And so she's always going to push things forward. So she developed the food menu at that time, and it fit. And we saw that coming in COVID. We got a lot more attention. It started to roll out. LT took her job. Kayla, her sous chef, moved in, is doing a phenomenal job at keeping that concept tight. And it's been going well.
Amazing.
Did you know at the time that one of the benefits of making that decision would be that you would have a whole crew that was immediately bought in?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I try and be super collaborative, and we are super collaborative. I think it's important to know you want people to make their own mistakes, right? Like, they can't be mistakes that cost you the business. You have to be extraordinarily careful about that. And I truly don't think that running by committee is a good decision necessarily. But sure. if you take the right people that you're confident in, and then at some point you have to start to allow them to kind of carve out parts of the business for themselves. We've had some successes and we've had some failures in that regard, but they certainly are invested in the business. The four operators that I have now in the restaurant, so the two general managers and the two chefs, I have 100% confidence in. And we're at the point now where they just bring me, and they completely run their businesses, which I really appreciate. We have ups and downs, and everybody goes through a 12-month calendar year where they got a month where they're just like, oh, I'm dragging ass. You know what I mean? Not doing anything. And we support each other in that regard. But for the most part, these four operators bring things to me now. And it's like, hey, listen, here's what we'd like to do. What do you think? And then we just plan that out. You know, We're going to do a pop-up at Proof here starting, I think, either next Sunday or the following, that the team at Proof completely developed. Like, literally, they would keep me updated, and I'd be like, well, you know, maybe this, or have you considered this, or we should change this. But, like, they completely developed it, and it's going to be like a, it's generated to try and increase Sunday sales. And, you know, Callum and AJ down there completely developed it. Nick, the chef, is getting into it, and I'm excited for it. Like, I think it's great. And that was purely from the end. They're going to own that, right? And positively and negatively, you know, it's going to blow up, and it's going to have some great things, and it's going to have some things where we're going to be able to point to and say, okay, that didn't work, and that's going to be on them, right? And that is super positive, because they're going to be able to say, I know now that didn't, I also know that I can't blame it on Jeff, or, you know, this, the other thing. That's going to help them grow as leaders as well.
And 10 years from now, they might look back and say, Jeff gave me this really opportunity. This guy that I worked for named Jeff gave me this opportunity to try this thing, and this is what I learned. And
yeah, and yeah, I hope that that's
very the cool case,
right? And I do try and foster that collaborative attitude as much as possible, but it just has to be kept in check. And I think that the important thing with that, my brief stint in oil and gas was negotiation. And so negotiation is all about, like, before you go into a thing, before you go into a negotiation, it's about setting your boundaries, right? Like, you've got your greatest expectation versus your absolutely no movement forward on a number of domains, right? And you can negotiate those between those barriers and those boundaries, those bumper zones, but you can't ever get outside of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I think that this is has a lot of similarities in, like, it's like, I'll see things that are suggested that I maybe don't think that'll necessarily work. I have my reasons that I don't think they'll work. I'll voice those reasons. But I'm willing to also go forward with it, because I don't think that it's going to cost us too much. Mm-hmm. I want to see whether it does work. Maybe I'm wrong. A lot of these people that work for me too now are far more connected to the guest, to the industry trends and things that are happening even than I am, because I'm focused on a spreadsheet a lot of the hours of the day, talking to lawyers and talking to bankers and talking to accountants. And I have to trust them in certain areas. So I'm happy to let them spread their wings, and I'm happy to, you know, let them succeed and fail. And they also, you know, and I hope that they'll all agree that they get to live those successes too. I'm not the type of guy that's like, look what I did. Put all the work in. So,
well, I just want to be on record and say thank you for your courage to trust your people and to give them clearly defined sandbox in which to play. And I think that there's a lot of operators out there who could learn from that. And like you said, it's not always easy. It's not always pretty. And sometimes it's a little scary, because when there's a gap between the performance and what the assumption was or the expectation was, you know, there's work to be done there. But it sounds like you're up for that work, because that work actually not only empowers them, but gives them some more tools in which to, again, now if there's another event or another area that they want to work on, now they're a little bit more juiced, as opposed to someone who's just going to squash their enthusiasm and say, well, shit, you know, if it didn't come from me, then it can't be any good.
Exactly. And I think that gap is important. Like, I think I can imagine any thing that we've ever rolled out that didn't have that gap of expectation versus reality. And you know, it's really important. We talk about this all the time. Something exciting comes up, and you're just like, and then everybody's eyes brighten up, and they're like, you know, even if it's a dish, you're like, okay, well, I'll relax. This dish is not going to save the world here. Like, but it's great. You know, or we plan an event and we're like, you know, like, this could, and like, let's take our wins, but also understand that temper our expectations, understand that we are going, there is a whole lot of work outside of what we're currently planning that's going to have to happen along. And I don't know, I just try and keep that interplay between motivation and also managing expectations even keel, let's say.
again, thanks. If nobody's told you in a long time, thank you.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
So great to see the stuff that you guys are doing, you know, and Jeff, obviously you've got your little, you know, growing company, but, you know, whether it's things on the board or with Terroir or, you know, other things that you're working on, it just appreciate all the good stuff you're doing for the industry.
Well, and I'll tell you too, I appreciate the thank you. And I got to say, for advice for people who are in, I guess, a position similar to mine, I don't often hear that. And it's because of where I'm isolated, where I am, right?
Right.
And so it is extraordinarily important to surround yourself with people who recognize those things, because you do like to hear that once in a while. And you also like to hear, no, like, that's not the right way to handle those things. And so if you surround yourself with really good people, I currently am in McKay Forums, which is like a CEO forum. Yep. And it's been just extraordinary because for those two things, I also have people saying, hey, you know, like I have people saying, hey, you're doing a good job there and that's the right direction. But then I also, which I was sorely missing, is people saying, let me tell you about my experiences going down that road. And those are just extraordinarily valuable because, you know, I try and mentor as much as I can, but I also still require mentors. I'm not pretending that I know it all. That's for darn sure. I certainly don't.
I think that's a really good sort of wrap up message and maybe a reason to even have you back again the next time we talk about why entrepreneurs need a mentor. You know, that might be the lead to have you back in a few months on another episode, because that's another conversation.
I couldn't agree more. And the fact is that we're a little bit over time for this particular episode, but Jeff, you had just so much value.
I run my gums a lot. I'm sorry.
That's quite all right, brother. If we had an issue, we'd just cut you off the knees. But that's, again, thank you very much for sharing your story, your perspective, your mentors' names, bringing them into the circle so that we can also acknowledge them. And also, thank you for stepping up for mentorship, because one of the other things that I've come to understand that the new generation require is that they're not looking for a leader. They're not looking for a boss. What they are, they're looking for a mentor. And that means that we have to open our hearts wider than just being a leader, because leading is easy. Mentoring is hard. Yet the lives that you're able to touch and bring value to and grow in confidence, you know, they'll continue giving back to this industry for a long time. So for that, from the bottom of my heart, I say thanks.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. And Adam, it's been great to meet you. Jim, hopefully I'll see you soon. Adam, I'll try and get down to see you and play some golf maybe.
All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Jim, any last word?
No, I think there's just so many good messages there. So Jeff, thanks again. And definitely hope to see you in person. Maybe we should try and get out and play golf one day here soon.
Oh,
so,
there you go.
It'd be my absolute pleasure.
Cheers. Thanks, everybody, for checking in and listening to another episode of Turning the Table, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Turning the Table with me, Adam Lamb, and Jim Taylor. We're on a mission to change the food and beverage industry for the better by focusing on staff mental health, physical and emotional well-being, by proactively measuring and managing staff workloads. Join other hospitality professionals co-creating the hashtag New Hospitality Culture by subscribing to our weekly newsletter at www.turningthetablepodcast.com/news. In every edition, you'll find innovative solutions ready to test and validate in your operation this weekend. Plus, listen to exclusive bonus content just for you. Connect with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram at Turning the Table Podcast. If you found value in this episode, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. Give us a star rating. It helps other hospitality professionals just like you find the show. Or better yet, grab the show link and share it with a friend or colleague who you want to see succeed. Thanks for stepping in and speaking out for an industry, craft, and fraternity that serves us all. Remember, retention is the new cool, y'all. This podcast was written, directed, and produced by me, Adam Lamb, and Jim Taylor. Turning the Table is a production of Realignment Media.